President Trump takes decisive action in Venezuela, reigniting a debate that reaches far beyond Caracas. Now, supporters say this is long overdue leadership, standing up to tyranny, protecting America's interests, and sending a message that socialism has consequences. Critics warn it sets a dangerous precedent, one that could redefine U.S. power for generations. This isn't about Venezuela. It's about what kind of nation America chooses to be. I'm Scottie Nell Hughes, and this is Perspective. For decades, Venezuela was one of the wealthiest nations in Latin America, rich in oil, resources, and opportunity. Then came socialism. Then came corruption. Then came collapse. Millions have fled. Families were destroyed. Freedom disappeared. And for years, Washington, well, they just talked. They issued statements. They paused resolutions. They did absolutely nothing. President Trump, however, is doing something different. This administration is operating from a simple principle. America does not benefit from chaos in our hemisphere. We do not benefit when narco states collapse at our doorsteps, and we do not benefit when adversaries fill the vacuum we refuse to confront. This is what America First actually looks like: strategic strength, regional stability, and moral clarity without endless wars. But strength, well, that always invites some criticism. So joining me first is Robert Barnes. He is a constitutional lawyer with unique insights into what is going on in Venezuela. Welcome, Robert.
Glad to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us. You know, you've actually disagreed with President Trump regarding Venezuela and what you would see things that need to be done differently. So I have to ask you, do you think there would have been better results if we had more people on the ground?
No, I don't. I don't think military intervention, is the solution to the problems identified by the administration with the Venezuelan government. By all published reports, Nicolas Maduro was willing to agree to many of the same terms and conditions that his successor, Delcy Rodriguez, has agreed to. So it's not clear what we really achieved other than showing our military power could go and kidnap a foreign head of state and bring him back to the United States for trial on what appeared to be, pardon the pun, trumped up charges. And so it's not clear to me that we are setting an example or precedent that will actually be protective of the American Constitutional Republic, but instead are undermining that Constitutional Republic. Tucker Carlson pointed out, once you go this route and go from republic to empire, the republic is dead. And that is my concern, is the method and the precedent set is deeply problematic for those of us that want America to return to its roots as a republic and away from the dangers and perils of empire.
You know what, Robert, you're actually right on. So I have to ask you, do you feel like we've been told the truth as from the very beginning over the past few weeks as to why Americans were getting involved or we're even getting involved in Venezuela at this point? Do you think that the White House and this administration could have possibly done a better job or just came clean and came truth as to what their end result was going to be rather than this game that we saw with headlines these past few months?
Well, I suspect the true motivations haven't been fully disclosed even to this date. I believe the president was misled into believing that intervention would lead to a oil bonanza. We are discovering, as the oil company executives themselves have stated, as other oil analysts have pointed out, Venezuela's oil reserves are themselves in doubt. What oil is produced is less than Brazil and Mexico. It's less than half of what Mexico produces on a daily basis. The conditions of getting the oil out are very problematic. Hundreds of billions of investment required to simply bring it up to the level that Mexico already has. And even then, you have very heavy oil that's useful for things like asphalt. I mean, it's not particularly universally useful. So I think he was misled probably by Paul Singer, who's got a $20 billion interest in Venezuela being required to pay off its debt to Citgo, formerly connected to the Venezuelan government, that Paul Singer bought for pennies and dimes on the dollar. And on the other hand, I think that Marco Rubio has always been obsessed with Cuba, saw the Venezuelan-Cuba connection, that if he could sever it, the Cuban government would collapse. Well, Mexico is already providing oil to Cuba as we speak. Russia may provide it, as they historically have. And so that hope also may be for naught. And then it's like, what did we do all this for? Did we do it just for a trial that Maduro may end up getting the case dismissed or acquitted? How embarrassing would that be? So it's not clear to me we really achieved much other than a momentary, temporary military perceived victory that will fade very quickly. Just ask Poppy Bush how well the Noriega seizure and the Iraq war turned out for him. Those were wars much more popular than this Venezuela military intervention in the 80s and the 90s, and he ended up with the lowest support for an incumbent in American presidential modern history. So that's why I'm still skeptical that we'll be able to achieve any meaningful objective, and we're risking the republic to achieve that objective in the precedent that we set.
You know, you bring up a very good point there, because you bring up the past and the history and how this usually works out for U.S. presidents. It doesn't usually go out too well for the presidents or the American people in the end. Doesn't get a good response, except in this case, and I wonder if you're scratching your heads, because conservatives even, Republicans, are cheering this movement. They're actually believing, yes, he's doing this to stop narcotics. This idea about oil, that's just a side note. And yet Republicans, and more importantly, Republican media, is buying this, and they're promoting it. Why is that? Are they just that stupid, or are they purposely, you know, doing this to go along just to keep in good terms with this White House?
I think you have a threefold objective. You have the big donor class that sees a money-making opportunity in Venezuela, even if it isn't the oil bonanza that the president was misled into believing it is. Then you have the Rupert Murdochs of the world that are aligned with the neocons at Fox News and the New York Post and the Wall Street Journal that Murdoch owns and controls. And he has always been for military intervention, just to make the point, because they want America to be an empire and they want precedents that move us in that direction. And then third, there the people in the CIA know that if this fails, if this backfires, well, it backfires on Trump, their long-term adversary and enemy politically. So the deep state sees it as a win-win. Either they get to show off as an empire, or Trump gets the heat and they get rid of a person who's been a problem for the empire. So I think their motivations are anything but aligned with America's best interest or Trump's best interest.
Robert, you brought up the word. I have to follow up on it with a question. You talked about the deep state. There has been conversations talking about potentially that there was also some election interference that Trump was trying to make sure was not going to happen, as there was past rumors that somehow those servers were related. We were talking about some of the other election tools used through Venezuela. Do you think that had any play in Trump's decision to come in and seize control of Venezuela?
I think it's one of the misrepresentations that's been made to the president. It involves a former spy chief for the Venezuelan government that was caught dealing drugs on the side. He was actually expelled by the Venezuelan government because he was facing criminal prosecutions there all the way back, I think, in 2019, when he joined the attempt of the Juan Guaido takeover and coup of the Venezuelan government. And after he got convicted and pled guilty, he is now pitching a story that he knows how Smartmatic and somehow Venezuela fixed the 2020 election. Anybody, I was on the front lines of that for President Trump. Smartmatic had nothing to do with it. They were only present LA County in 2020 election anyway. And so this is just a lifelong liar spreading false lies in order to sucker the Trump administration into getting out early. And I suspect it was another false intel fed to him by Marco Rubio and the CIA in order to do what they wanted to do, which was to go in and depose Nicolas Maduro. And I think it will turn out that there will be no proof at all that Maduro has concerning the 2020 election, because Venezuela had nothing to do with the U.S. 2020 election.
It's funny. It seems like those around him know exactly sort of like the way to key President Trump to the key words they have to say. And obviously going into the midterms, President Trump wants to make sure that we have safe, secure elections here in the United States. What do you take about President Trump not acknowledging, you know, Maria Machado as the president? She was ready to step right on in. It looked like Rubio was ready to make her be president, and yet she's not in power right now. What do you make of this move? Is it just as simple as some of the left-stream media has been saying, well, it's because she won the Nobel Peace Prize over Trump, this is petty because of for him, or is there a deeper reason?
I think it was mostly practicality, which is that, you know, unless you're going to replace the entire Venezuelan government, and they had the tools to go in and kidnap Maduro. They didn't have the tools to displace the entire government, number one. Number two, Machado is not very popular at all. From the evidence that I've seen, she has about a 90% disapproval rating in Venezuela, which would only get worse after this intervention, because even critics of Maduro don't like their leaders getting kidnapped by foreign nations because it makes them look bad and everything else. So, and then third, the, you know, aligning with the Latin oligarchs has been a death nail for to prior U.S. military interventions, using as the best example of Panama. Real goal was to get back control of the Panama Canal by displacing the entire Panama military forces, not just taking out Noriega. And we aligned with a bunch of oligarchs that increased the drug supply by double after Noriega was removed from Panama. Twice as much drugs flowed through Panama after that. And there was such a disastrous handling of Panama that the efforts to regain the canal went backwards rather than forwards. So I think President Trump knows that dealing with the Latin oligarchs is not a way to have any degree of success in this regime. His best hope is that Delcy Rodriguez plays ball in such a way that he gets what he thinks he's going to be able to attain and achieve without civil war breaking out in Venezuela, because the Pentagon's own simulations that was publicly disclosed this past week showed that every view of regime change in Venezuela led to civil war. So we don't want that. That will lead to more drug problems, more immigration problems, more gang problems. And Machado was almost a guarantee to trigger civil war in Venezuela. So she will never be put in by the Trump administration to control the, Venezuela, because they know how that turns out.
Absolutely. Now, here's the other issue in all of this, because it's immediately came out with this idea of that the U.S. was now going to start abiding by the Monroe Doctrine, or I'm sure you've heard the Donroe Doctrine. I'm actually not opposed to that, if we can just keep to that. How should the United States responsibly respond when you have influence in our hemisphere without escalating tensions or overcoming American resources in these situations with other countries that might be more adversarial to America's views?
Well, the Monroe Doctrine was penned by John Quincy Adams, an old family cousin. And the very beginning of the Monroe Doctrine, written by President Monroe to Congress back in the 1820s, said that the problem with foreign intervention is that it destabilizes the region, and that America had an interest in no foreign interventions in order to stabilize the region. The focal point at that time was on Europe doing foreign interventions, but it was not cheerleading the U.S. doing such interventions. As John Quincy Adams famously said in July 4th speech, America does not go abroad searching for monsters to destroy. So a true application of the Monroe Doctrine would be to discourage any country militarily intervening in the United in the Latin American continent or Central American region, not just, and that would apply to the United States as well. So now I understand the president explained that he was just applying the dumbed down version of the Monroe Doctrine, and hence we got the Dunroe Doctrine that he cited for it. That's apparently the mentally disabled brother of John Quincy Adams. It's less known. So the I'm in favor of strict application of the Monroe Doctrine, not a fan of the Dunroe Doctrine.
Well, anybody would know, would be a constitutional expert like yourself, Robert Barnes. One last question before I let you go. Where do you think that we should draw the line between restraint and responsibility when we do come across these authoritarian regimes that might undermine regional stability here in our hemisphere? What role should the U.S. play in that situation? And can we do it at this point diplomatically and less militarily?
Yeah, and my understanding is that what Maduro wanted was relief from sanctions, and right. People forget he didn't run to China to sell the Venezuelan oil. We forced him into the arms of China, right. Much like we forced Russia into the arms of China with our Ukraine conflict. So the smarter strategy was the sanctions hadn't worked, they backfired. So lift the sanctions and get into a contractual agreement whereby they restore resource accessibility to the U.S. and remove China from the equation. And I think, in my understanding, is Maduro offered that precise deal to the president, and he was convinced by the only part that Maduro had not agreed to was to cut off Cuba. And I don't think cutting off Cuba is going to have the big benefit that they think it will. So in that region. So I think it's that would have been the more effective approach. Generally, it's going back to Teddy Roosevelt. You talk softly and carry a big stick. Right now, we talk bigly and carry a small stick. And I don't think that's going to net benefit us long term. And the global impression is that we've now declared ourselves an empire that doesn't have any respect or regard for international rules or laws or any of the rest of it. And I think that breaching those international customs and norms might backfire us against us in the future if China and Russia decide to take us up on that lack of international respect and might makes right.
We've definitely changed things from the past in that case. Robert Barnes, thank you so much for being with us today.
Glad to be here.
So, knowing what we've just heard from Robert Barnes, I want to talk about more the decisive leadership that we need here to protect America. Or are we just risk setting a precedent we may one day regret? We'll be right back. Welcome back. Today we are discussing the latest out of Venezuela following the daring raid to capture President Maduro. We are now joined by our second guest, Esteban Carrillo, who is a journalist and editor at The Cradle. Thanks for waiting with us, Esteban. This action, some say, could set a dangerous precedent. I want you to listen to what President Trump had to say.
We're going to be running it with a group, and we're going to make sure it's run properly. We're going to rebuild the oil infrastructure, which will cost billions of dollars. It'll be paid for by the oil companies directly.
So, specifically, Esteban, what worries you most about the long-term implications of this raid?
Well, first of all, we need to talk about the precedent that it sets and what it means for the United States as a nation moving forward, as a member of the larger international community. How can the United States be a trusted partner when it is willing to use its power, its military power, in this way, in disregard of any international convention and of any international law? I think that is the main question here. Other than that, the long-term question here is, what is actually the plan for Venezuela? Because Donald Trump has made all of these promises. He's talking about the oil companies being behind rebuilding Venezuela's oil infrastructure, but then oil executives have not actually shown much excitement, much enthusiasm for this scheme. Then at the same time, you have the current Venezuelan government that was, led by Nicolas Maduro, but now is being led by Delcy Rodriguez, and everything else remains the same. Donald Trump is talking about Venezuela essentially as a new colony. And I think that is really the bigger question here. How is the United States going to move forward as part of the international community? Are we looking at a recharged neocolonialism? Are we looking at a nation that cannot really be trusted anymore to be a partner or to even respect basic laws? And what does it mean for the rest of the world? What does it mean for Ukraine? What does it mean for Taiwan? Can Russia and China act in the same way? With what moral superiority can the United States or any of its partners speak now when we see that Washington is more than willing to go into a sovereign nation and kidnap its leader?
So let me ask this question. In this hemisphere, we're just going to talk about, and I agree, this obviously has implications around the world, but in this hemisphere, do you think there is any reason, any excuse, any motivation that the United States and its leadership has the ability and should step into another foreign government and take charge of the country? Is there anything that should be going on within that country that would justify that action?
I don't think so. I think the basic laws of living alongside each other should determine that another nation, and this is based on the UN Charter, another nation cannot interfere in a nation's internal affairs. The United States does not have the standing, it does not have the jurisdiction to go in and do what it did in Venezuela, or what it's threatening to do in Cuba, in Colombia, in Mexico, even in Greenland, right? But they are talking about a national security strategy. Donald Trump keeps framing this as security, as protection of the United States, of control of the Western Hemisphere. But the reality is, this is a resource war. This is about kicking out competitors, right? And splitting up the world, essentially, like if it was just a big birthday cake. Donald Trump is saying, this is my part, this is what I get to keep, and everyone else needs to stay out. And the question is now, you have dozens of nations, in particular in Latin America, you know, from Mexico down south all the way to Chile, each with their own flag, each with their own government, each with their own system, each with their own issues, including the United States, a nation that we cannot deny is full of issues internally. And yet there's this power projection that seeks to impose a system on others, and not just a system, now even a government. Yesterday, Donald Trump tweeted a picture of himself calling himself the president of Venezuela. What does that say to everyone else who is on the list? You know, I feel like the actions of this U.S. government in particular is going to eventually lead to a mass rejection of the U.S. in general, and in particular in Latin America, where we have before through history known how to defend our land and how to take up arms to fight invaders. And sadly, the United States under Donald Trump is currently positioning itself as the invader, as the one that comes to take resources under threat of bombings, of attacks, because that's what he's doing in Venezuela. He's saying, if you don't do what I say, I will just bomb you again.
Esteban, I have to ask you, though, you have seen the response here in America. There have been several marches. There is quite a larger community of Venezuelans and others, Cubans, who are very happy with what the United States did. Republicans are coming out. A lot of conservatives are coming out and say they're glad that President Trump stepped in, not only from what has been sold to us as to stop drugs coming across our borders, but the illegal issues that are happening with illegals crossing over our borders. But more importantly, just because they felt like that, obviously, they wanted to return back to their homes, and they had issues with most of them were native from Venezuela themselves. What do you say to those families that are actually happy with President Trump's moves?
Well, I say good luck to them. I hope that their dreams do actually come true, their wishes come true, although it doesn't really seem like it because, as I said, Donald Trump hasn't actually replaced the government. He only kidnapped the head of state. Everything else remains the same. And inside Venezuela, there's been great rejection. Now, as far as the diaspora, this is a long dream of theirs. They have been talking about this for a very, very long time, that the United States needs to come in and, you know, deliver some democracy, as they're wont to do, using bombs, using power projection, using weapons. And they got it. But then it's a very Donald Trump operation as well. Donald Trump has shown that he likes these very short and sweet in and out operations, right? Like the 12-day war, the way he ended or put a stop to the last year's war in Iran by just coming in and bombing some nuclear sites. So now he seems to be approaching Latin America in the same way. At the same time, well, you have a lot of media manipulation about the reality in Venezuela. You know, when you talk about drug trafficking, I would actually, you know, bring up the fact that the Justice Department, the next day after Maduro, the day before Maduro showed up in court, they had to change their indictment to essentially admit that the Cartel de los Soles, which was presented as this huge narco-terrorist organization that was, you know, the source of all evil, doesn't actually exist. It doesn't exist. This is now in their new indictment. At one point, before Donald Trump sent troops into Caracas, you had some representatives, in particular from Florida, talking about Nicolás Maduro was giving uranium to Hamas and Hezbollah. You know, absolute fabrications close to reality, and yet they are allowed to spread, they are allowed to repeat, and when the confirmation comes that neither the Cartel de los Soles exists, and I'm pretty sure that Venezuela has never sent any uranium to anyone, it doesn't matter anymore because the damage is already done. So just, you know, to go back to your question, I really do wish the best to the Venezuelan diaspora that wish for their country to be attacked, but the future does not seem very bright at the moment.
Well, and it's interesting, and I hear all of the points that you're making, and I understand them as well. What would be, in your opinion, a better alternative? If not this way, and let's point this out, this is something Republicans and Democrats, past administrations on both sides of the aisle would have liked to have taken this action. They've threatened it, they've teased it for so long, they never actually did it. That being said, how should the United States, do you believe, respond to failed states or states that are destabilizing our country and having an effect on what is going on with our own immigration problems here in the U.S.?
I think the United States needs to look at how other countries react to their internal issues, to Americans' internal issues. There's no third country threatening to invade the United States to deliver democracy or to fix a failed state. This is a completely American fabrication. They see themselves as the world police, the U.S. government, I'm talking specifically here, and they have for many decades, and that gives them the right in their people's eyes to go and do what they did in Venezuela. If they were actually trying to cut the flow of drugs, they would look to Ecuador, where most of the drugs actually come out. If they were trying to slow the flow of immigration, maybe they should look into reducing some of the sanctions, maybe stop using economic sanctions that starve populations. You know, there are many other diplomatic ways. There's still frameworks in place that can be used, but it's unfortunate that the United States continues to refuse to even acknowledge them.
Well, thank you, Esteban Carrillo, for sharing your perspective today with us.
Thank you very much.
So this debate matters because it goes to the heart of American power. Weakness, well, that invites chaos. Chaos invites adversaries. And leadership, real leadership, well, guess what? That always comes with a risk. America first does not mean America absent. It means that America is acting with purpose, strength, truth, and clarity. Now, President Trump has chosen to confront a crisis that past administrations wanted to confront, but they ignored. History is going to decide the outcome. But silence was never going to be an option underneath the Trump administration. The real question isn't whether America should lead. It's whether we're actually prepared to handle the responsibility when we do. I'm Scottie Nell Hughes, and this has been Perspective.